Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. If you enjoy our podcasts, please tell your colleagues and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy!
Hi there, welcome back for my seventh COVID catch-up. COVID being communication, organisation, vital signs, interventions and dilemmas relevant to COVID. On the communication front, Fiz Isagawan got in contact with me. She's a paediatric registrar in Surrey in England. After last week's podcast and I was tweeting about it, I've been talking for some time now on this theme of how we manage communication in the resuscitation room or with critically ill children where a number of staff are wearing aerosol-generating protective PPE, i.e. they're going to have masks, gowns, goggles, visors, etc. And communication is going to be very limited because you really can't hear each other speak and or think sometimes. And she quite rightly pointed out a blog that she had written with Helen Grote, a neurology registrar at the Chelsea and Westminster, and both Helen and Fiz are deaf doctors who rely on lip reading in their daily work. And this blog in BMJ Opinion highlights the fact that, and this is something it's quite embarrassing really, a lot of us have been kind of highlighting this challenge of communication when in fact challenges of communication have always existed. And in some respects, it shouldn't really have taken COVID to demonstrate that some healthcare professionals and patients do have extra needs when it comes to being able to communicate in critical care situations. One of the things that Fiz and Helen are talking about is a need for transparent masks so that people can see the mouth itself so that you can lip read. And also, I think that just really adds to an emotional element. Being able to see someone's face completely does give you an advantage in being able to read some of the emotions around a particular topic. So thanks for that, Fiz. And again, it's really useful for this type of podcast to receive feedback for people to challenge, raise concerns and bring stuff into the arena that I may not have thought of previously. On an organisational front, I was in my first Slack journal club last Wednesday. It was a joint endeavour between a hospital in Leicester, Crumlin Hospital and the Royal London Hospital, and we analysed a paper between a group of consultants and trainees. It was a great deal of fun. As I'd been warned previously by Danny Hall, one of the paediatric emergency medicine consultants in Dublin, that the time on Slack is very different to real time. And in between all the writing, reading comments and then feeding back, that the whole journal club took an hour and a half. But it was good because I think it's something that is a record now of all the discussion that took place around that particular journal, but that can now then be read by others who weren't able to make it. But you've got the complete chronology from the initial questions we asked the trainees to the trainees kind of feeding back, discussing some of the aspects of the methodology and the results, and then some of our feedback on that. And I'm very grateful for Dr. Michael Barrett, one of the PEM consultants in Dublin, for his assistance with this and some of his really useful insights. And I don't think journal clubs happen enough, and I think, and it doesn't really necessarily need to be Slack, but taking the opportunity that COVID has given us to look at the way that we educate about kind of academia and statistical analysis and critical appraisal, we've got that opportunity now, and I think we should really grasp it with both hands. And certainly, I do hope some of these multi-departmental journal clubs will become an increasing feature of our educational programme. In relation to vital signs, I think what's been really interesting is to see the rapid development of case definitions and understanding of this new hyperinflammatory shock condition that does seem to be not only circulating in the UK, but other cases around the world. And I'm aware in New York, they may have had up to 70 such children in the last month or so. A little paper in The Lancet from the South Thames Retrieval Service gives a number of descriptions of, I think it's 8 patients, ranging from, I think, 4 to about 18 years old. And one of the interesting facts is if you look at their inflammatory markers, these are not just, a bit of a CRP. I think the lowest CRP in the case series was 169, but the other kind of cases were well up there into 250, 300, I think 556 in one case. So this is not just a simple inflammatory chemical response. This is relatively marked. I think that the paper's open access, so please do have a look. But I think everyone's becoming much more aware of this condition now. And I think what's important for most paediatricians, so these will be a kind of acute general paediatricians, those of us who work in emergency departments, again, this may be something we never see. So sometimes the media or the way that we read things on social media may lead us to believe that this is everywhere. It's clearly not. And I don't think we want to get into the stage of thinking about it in every patient we see. But certainly, I think if you see a child who you are admitting and that it's not just a simple admission for a particular concern or complaint, and it's maybe someone that you'd phone someone about to check on later on and their blood's come back and you've got higher than normal inflammatory markers, I think you do need to stop and think, okay, is there something different going on here? Have I done everything I can to make sure that this child is going to be as safe as possible during their hospital stay? And in that, I'll move straight on to interventions because the recovery trial has now been able to recruit paediatric patients in the UK. So recovery is a randomised evaluation of COVID-19 therapies, and this has been going in adults for some time. And essentially, it's where you can get randomised to no additional treatment or corticosteroid or hydroxychloroquine or azithromycin or lopinavir and a ritonavir combination. And we now have the ability to recruit children to this. Now, as I've just been saying, that this is not a commonly severe disease in children, but I do think that those who are working with children who do become severely unwell and are not just needing simple supportive measures, please be aware of this trial because it is now going to be a useful way, one, of monitoring the progress of these patients in a robust way, but also it may give us a heads up as to which treatments are going to be most effective. And it's a pretty involved study, given the number of arms you can be recruited to, but it's been well designed, and there's a useful YouTube video on the website if you just Google recovery study. And then last but not least, dilemmas. There's an interesting paper in, again, the BMJ about COVID fatigue. And I think I spoke about this one or two podcasts ago about this, the problem of, I think what I termed it was engagement exhaustion. You spend so much time trying to plan, going to meetings, that you're more fatigued than you would be having just done a clinical shift. But this blog covers, I think, quite clearly some of the challenges, and the authors, who are Claire Gerarda, a previous chair of the Royal College of General Practitioners in the UK, and currently a medical director of NHS Practitioner Health, is writing with Caroline Walker, who's a psychiatrist and therapist. And they say, or they highlight, there is no brief respite created by the odd coffee break between meetings or the mindless chitter-chatter with colleagues. Now, I think I've been quite fortunate where I work to be able to be in a situation where we are able to have a bit of downtime on the shop floor. We've created a number of virtual teleconferences where we catch up with colleagues. So I don't think that we're completely devoid of the little coffee break. But we have discussed recently as a consultant team that because of the reduced numbers of staff on the shop floor, you don't always have that buddy to
talk things through with.
And I think this is one of the issues. It's not just the amount of work that we're having to do in terms of planning. Because of isolation, you've not got to that contact with people that does break down some of the daily grind of work. And as time goes on, I think we are going to have to be more inventive, especially as it's likely that social distancing isn't going to go away anytime soon, to think about how we do touch base with others, how we are going to de-stress. What is this thing that's going to replace the quick corridor conversation that can be so instrumental in debugging some of the issues we face on a daily basis? So thanks for listening again. Please do get in contact any challenges, concerns or queries, and I'll try and pick them up in future podcasts. Thanks for your time. Cheers.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. Remember, you can subscribe to our feed on iTunes and Spotify. Thank you for listening.